From Baldoyle to Beaumont.
Community radio for Northeast Dublin. 90.3.
FM. I am delighted to be joined on the line by Maria O'Dwyer from the Prevention and Early Intervention Network, PEIN for short, at the Northside Partnership. Good morning, Maria, and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Tony. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I am fine. I'm all the better for talking to you this morning. Now, two questions jump out at me from the title of this. What are you trying to intervene in and what are you trying to prevent?
Good question, Tony, really. That's prevention and early intervention. That's the ultimate question in a nutshell. Essentially, when we're talking about prevention and we want to prevent something, it's just simply about providing a protective layer of support to children and families to stop difficulties arising in the first place. So say things like home visiting into homes, baby and toddler groups, just sites that provide that protective layer. So the kind of flags that go up before anything happens to ensure good outcomes for that family. Then there are times, as you know yourself, where with the best will in the world, the flags don't go up quick enough. So early intervention then is the other side of it. It's about providing support at the earliest possible stages when the difficulties do occur. So we all talk about putting out fires, you know, when we have fires and issues arise. So really early intervention is that the fire extinguisher and smoke alarms are in there at the earliest point to stop it escalating.
That's, I think, a very, very good analogy, actually, to use there. Now, you know, we have heard, and the studies are appearing now, and I would imagine that there's more on the way, of the emotional and psychological damage that was done to children during COVID. I presume you are seeing some of the effects of that as well, are you, Maria?
Absolutely. So our organisation PEN works with organisations. We represent organisations, individuals who work with children and family and community services. So our service members have such reports and, as you said, such research and data that's really emerging about the psychological and the kind of psychosocial impact of the pandemic on children. You know, Donny, we know that the pandemic was a shock to all of us. So when we talk about the first time ever that we're all thrown into something very commonly that we're unsure of and it's the unknown. And then you have to think about the vulnerability of children, where kind of any change to routine is difficult anyway. But then if you have children with any additional vulnerabilities, such as, you know, disabilities, learning difficulties, physical disabilities, or children who experience what we call adverse childhood experiences. So, for example, the 200,000 children in Ireland living in homes where there is alcohol misuse. All of those children had a double vulnerability once the pandemic hit, because their protective layers were removed. They weren't attending services where you had that protective layer on a daily basis. So, for example, children with disabilities or children with learning difficulties, where routine is so important and be seen and supported by outside professionals, for that to shut down quite suddenly, that creates, you know, a significant impact in terms of mental health and well-being. But for children then who were at risk before the pandemic, for things like living in homes where there's domestic violence or, as I said, substance abuse, home wasn't their safe place. We always think of home as a safe place for children, but when home isn't the safe place, protracted periods of time during the three lockdowns meant that those children were actually in a place that was unsafe for them. So in terms of the clean-up from that or the fallout from that, there's significant impact on mental health and well-being. And of course, the other side of that then is we don't have the services available, because as we know, pre-pandemic, we had waiting lists for psychology and mental health services that were completely unacceptable. And post-pandemic, they have now escalated and grown to a point where we just don't have people or services on the ground to meet that need.
Yeah, and that is something which is permeating right throughout all aspects of medical and psychological requirements in the country. I mean, we see waiting lists are exponentially growing, and they, as you say, they were before the pandemic, and now we see that they're even longer again, and it's going to take longer to get through them. And right across the spectrum, we see that. And also, you mentioned there about, you know, children vulnerable at home where there may be alcohol or substance abuse. I think there was a report published last week, I think it was, in relation to the recent minimum unit pricing on alcohol. And that showed that there has been no decrease in the purchase of alcohol. But what has actually happened is that the money that was required for other things in the home has been moved over and is being used to buy drink. So, I mean, that's a double whammy as well. And, of course, the experts in the field predicted that this would happen. And were they listened to? We all know the answer to that.
That's right. Alcohol Action Ireland, Silent Voices, there have been significant research and, as you said, reports released that indicates just that, that where, you know, people are thinking we're all at home and it's safer. No, actually, people are drinking more at home, or were drinking more at home during the pandemic, and those resources just reallocated. And that's the double whammy effect, you know?
Yeah, and again, I mean, we, and it's a point I have made, Maria, on I don't know how many occasions in relation to different things in our society, and I'd say you see this firsthand, but any society really is judged on how they deal with and look after the most vulnerable in society, and children are vulnerable. Now, I mean, their vulnerability is doubled when there's a substance abuse in the home, and like you say, the amount of work that's facing you now and people in your sector, it has increased exponentially as a result of COVID.
It absolutely has. And I suppose what it is that the resources aren't there to match it, because where you have growing issues and diminishing resources or overburdened resources, it means that the point for prevention and early intervention passes, that window closes, so the issues become bigger, and we see them moving into, we see young children moving into adolescence and young adulthood still carrying the brunt and the fallout of what was experienced during COVID. And it's that window, it's that critical window of how we get in early. So say, Donny, as you'd know, during the pandemic as well, the redeployment of public health nurses, for example, meant that half of all babies born during the first year of the pandemic didn't have their first developmental check. So significant clean-up there in terms of things that were missed physically and intellectually for children at that point, but also for parents, and especially first-time parents, the kind of confidence and competence that comes from interacting with professionals with their baby at those checks was missed. That has a significant impact on how we parent. So it's even those small little nuanced pieces that we don't see in the stats that we will have long-term fallout from.
And that is the problem, really, because it's like an open sore, really, because the longer it goes on untreated and undealt with, the worse it's getting. And, you know, yes, they are what you're dealing with and what you're trying to help and doing your very best to help are small and young children. But in the blink of an eye, as we all know, children grow up and they're going to bring that baggage with them into their early teen years. And we all know the impacts then on the society that they're living in if they are bringing that sort of those issues with them into their teen years.
That's exactly it. I mean, we have a tendency, you know, stiff upper lip in Ireland. We've come out of it, it's grand, aren't we? Fine, it's back to normal. Without fully recognising that there isn't a normal now, that it has changed significantly. It's a normal, but it's a very different one. It's not back to what we knew. So for children who dealt with things like, you know, unprecedented exposure and discussion of death, you know, constant coverage of loss and fear, disruption to services and the non-identification of issues that they may have, whether they were psychological or physical, it means that they do carry that. And that becomes then trauma that's carried through generations. So, you know, we know and we've learned now so much about adverse childhood experiences that the children who experience that adversity become the adults who are holding it as well. And that's the intergenerational piece. And that's where the pandemic has had significant impact, that we will feel it for years to come. I mean, we know that we had there was significant learning from the pandemic as well in terms of the positive sides of it. We had a refocus on play, family life, where a significant number of families was experienced differently because both parents were at home, and for a lot of families that was a departure from the norm. We saw how we used our green spaces better, how we managed to stay within communities, and there was real positivity in that, and I hope that we take that learning forward. But similarly, we'd hope that we recognise the learning of what we have yet to address and how we have to address it, and the importance of making sure that we do address it. And it isn't the idea that we've moved on, the pandemic is over, we got through it, let's just keep going. There has to be looking back at what happened, because we have to work with those children and families that suffered the most.
And, I mean, look, there is no, and I don't want to be raising any alarm bells now this morning or frightening people, but there is no guarantee that there won't be another pandemic coming along, and we need to learn the lessons from this one in order to cope better the next time round.
Absolutely. I think you're spot on there, Donny. And I mean, that's the piece I think about prevention, early intervention. It's we take everything that happens and we dissect and look at it to see what the main learning from it is. So if it happens again, and we'd all hope, I mean, on a wing and a prayer, everybody's hoping we don't see it again. But in the event that something like that was to happen again, that we know what kind of mechanisms we have to have in place or put in place really quickly to negate some of the impact and the fallout from it. I remember when the pandemic first started, actually, the Secretary General of the UN at the time, Antonio Guterres, had a really, it was a powerful analogy that I think about every now and then. He's like, it's the first time in humanity that we're all out to sea together. You know, generally, there's some up or some are down, but this is the first time we're all out at sea together. But the difference is that some of us are in super yachts and some of us are clinging to drifting debris. And I thought, wow, that's a really powerful way to visualise how we're all experiencing this.
Now, the other thing about that, Maria, and I mean, you've alluded to it there on a couple of occasions, so I'm going to come straight out and ask the question now and get your thoughts on it. You would be liaising, I imagine, with a couple of different ministers, Roderick O'Gorman being one, and ultimately Pascal Donoghue, Minister for Finance, being the other. If you were in a room with the two of them this minute, what would you be looking for?
I thought the first thing really that I would ask is, and the pen would advocate for, is to agree a whole of government approach to how we do things. I mean, we're seeing this more and more. So one of the lessons from the pandemic is when we decide to put in protective layers, we can do it, and we can do it really quickly. Like the rent freezes stopped homelessness in its tracks. We hadn't been able to do that before it, and we haven't been able to do it since. But when we had to, we absolutely did it. And why? Because the whole of government worked together and had to react as a collective. And I think we need to apply the same to both the definition of prevention, early intervention, let's get a whole of government agreement on it, but also a whole of government agreement on accountability and responsibility. That for children and families, it isn't just the responsibility of Roderick O'Gorman's department or social protection. It's all government. It's a whole of government approach and collective responsibility that we need to have.
Yeah, so, and of course... go on, Maria, sorry.
I was just going to say, Tony, it's also about all of the ministers in all of our departments ring-fencing money for prevention and early intervention. We spend an awful lot of money in Ireland putting out the fires, and we absolutely have to. That has to be done, but it can't always be at the cost of prevention and early intervention.
Yeah, and of course, that is the thing. What was the old adage years ago? An ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure?
That's exactly it. You know, and nationally we're seeing that. So the Department of Children, Equality, Disabilities, Integration and Youth, even by its title, like what a huge brief that department has. But a lot of the time and a lot of resources in that department have to be used, and rightly so, to address kind of historic institutional abuse issues that we have, like mother and baby homes. Absolutely have to be addressed. But additional resources need to be freed up so that address and redress can happen, but prevention and early intervention happen simultaneously. My fear would be that if we don't do that, well then going forward in 20, 30 years' time, we'll have another national scandal, and that would be direct provision and the conditions that children and family had to live in our current time, 30 years from now, and we look retrospectively. So it's about balancing, as you said, addressing like where the fire is, but at the same time making sure that we have the smoke alarm and the fire extinguishers in for other issues.
Yeah, and I think
it's that balance that's critical.
I think those issues around direct provision are raising their head already, in fact have been raising them for a number of years now at this stage, because... My recollection of it, Maria, is that direct provision was originally supposed to be maximum of 6 months. We now have children who were born here in direct provision who have sat there leaving Sept and are now, yes. You know what I mean? Yes. It's that's, that whole thing is bonkers.
It is. It's incredibly sad. And for families in that system who must look and wonder, you know, how everything around them is moving and they're at this standstill. And you see, the reality of it is there are constantly going to be interruptions to what we have planned. So I know that the Minister's Department had planned that by the end of next year and towards 2024, we would see the end of direct provision. But now you'd wonder with the Ukrainian crisis, those plans have moved again. So it's the constant kind of stop-start, and that's where we need to kind of ring-fence the prevention, early intervention piece. It's that other stuff will happen, and it will always happen, but we need to keep our eyes on how do we stop it escalating.
Maria, for people listening this morning who would like more information or to get involved, how do they do that?
Well, we'd be delighted to hear from them, Donny. We are at the Prevention Early Intervention Network, and you'll find us at www.pen.ie. We're very lucky to be housed and under the lead agency that is Northside Partnership. So even though we're based in Limerick, we have a national reach, and as I said, NFP is our home. So if anybody wants to hop on the website, contact details are there. Our website's just about to be updated, but our old one is still there. And we'd absolutely love to hear from any organisations or individuals with an interest in prevention and early intervention in children, family and community services.
Maria, it was absolutely lovely to talk to you this morning. Maria O'Dwyer from the Prevention and Early Intervention Network, PEIN for short. As she said, under the auspices of the Northside Partnership and mention of the Northside Partnership, as always, a huge thanks to Sarah Clahasy for organising this slot every Monday for me. Maria, continue
Absolutely.
Good work, and I wish you well with it, but I think you have a monumental task on your hands. I really do, and I wish you luck with it.
Thanks so much, Donny. I think as a country we have that task, right? But thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it, and it was great talking to you.
And you, my dear. Thank you so much. Have a nice week. And again, thank you so much, and good luck with the challenges that's facing you. And of course, I suppose not alone you, but the families out there who are facing challenges and continue to face them on a daily basis. Maria, thanks a million again.
Thanks, Donny.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye, Donny.
Well, there you go, my friends. Times are, as Maria said there, and quite rightly, yes, for the bulk of people, this is over, or more or less over, and the country is trying to move on. When we move on, it's important that we don't leave people behind. We have done it time out of number over the years. There's a lot of people damaged in various ways as a result of COVID. They should not be forgotten. They should not be left behind. And I think, you know, when you look at us as a country, in the greater scheme of things, we are not a poor country. Money should be found, and it can be found. We've seen it time out of number where money can be produced out of thin air on the back of the sofa and various other places. This is one of those cases, and we can definitely see that.
From Baldoyle to Beaumont, community radio for Northeast Dublin, 90.3.
Near FM.